You know, in Unreal Bluegrass, we take the opportunity to do what we do best, which is reach out to different topics. We've had authors interviewed on the program, songwriters, singers, performers, instrument manufacturers. Today, we're going to talk to Heidi Herzog and Mike Compton. They have a Monroe mandolin camp. The entire concept of this bluegrass camp and is, I think, more a phenomenon to bluegrass music. I know there are other types of music that have get-togethers, but the bluegrass camp concept and the teaching concept is something I think that is really unique in its widespread nature to bluegrass. And Heidi Herzog and Mike Compton, who you know, Mike Compton, you've heard him on the program before, they have a very unique approach to how they get campers together and how they instruct them, especially in the Bill Monroe style. We're going to talk to them in the second hour. Really fascinating discussion, and all about teaching methods and just the whole nature of this. Again, I use the word phenomenon of bluegrass camps. Really happy to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass Heidi Herzog. Hello, Heidi.
Hi, Steve. And glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here. And Mike Compton. How are you, Mike?
Howdy, Steve. I'm good.
Good. Things we wanted to talk about a little bit. The initial jumping off point would be the Monroe Mandolin Camp, which is September 18th, 22nd, this year, 2019. Monteagle? How do I pronounce the city this is in?
Monteagle.
Monteagle, of course.
Well, the T is not quite so dominant.
All right. Well, I didn't know. I don't know.
It's sort of a southern town. You got to kind of slur it together.
Well, see, I live in Kentucky, and I know Louisville is two syllables, so I can slur. You know, Louisville is Louisville. That's it. It's kind of like a stuck in a pigeon's throat, Louisville.
Same rules apply.
All right. Listen, Heidi, I remember seeing you in Raleigh several years ago, which makes me think this. How many years has the Monroe Mandolin Camp been in existence?
So our very first year that we had the camp was 2014,
okay.
And Mike and I started planning this and, you know, doing strategic planning and putting our dream bluegrass team together in 2013.
Well, now it's grown from what I remember from the flyers and just chatting with you in the hallways down in Raleigh. The staff has grown, and I think that there's a reason behind that, but the mission statement on the website, which is very accessible. There's a mission statement as to why you've named it the Monroe Mandolin Camp, and then we can talk a little bit about how you got to this expansive thing where you are right now.
Right. So this music, the music that was created by Bill Monroe with his co-creators, who we call co-creators of the Bluegrass Boys, is so fundamentally important in the world of country music, in what's going on in this genre today. And what our whole focus about having this as a niche, having this as a very specified offering for instruction, was both to preserve the music that Bill wrote and recorded, as well as educating current contemporary music players about these fundamental building blocks and stylistic elements and techniques that were, in their day and time, revolutionary, I guess, as bluegrass music was being put together. So those are some of the reasons why we created this camp and made it all about Bill's music. There's such a wealth that he wrote, and you can dedicate a life to studying it and still not get all of it.
Mike, let me ask you this. You're probably close in age to me, but we grew up with, you know, Monroe was still walking the earth in a very proud manner and still influencing everything every day. And so, as Heidi was saying, he created and co-created, we have the opportunity to actually see those people live. So now as time progresses, I think this whole concept of a Monroe Mandolin Camp, it has to be taught. You can, in other words, you can find YouTube, but as far as someone to actually play it in front of you and help you understand the concept and the feeling, I think that makes us that much more critical.
Yeah, well, I mean, Bill was very much alive. The first festival I went to was also the first festival I saw him when he was ever wearing blue jeans on stage. It was a work day, and they invited everybody to come up and sing and play. I think basically we were spoiled in being able to see him very easily.
That's the better way of putting it, yeah.
Yeah, back in those days, I mean, he was around everywhere, and I think a lot of people began to take it take for granted that just Bill was around and didn't give it a second thought. And I think at this point in time, it's kind of gotten to the point to where he's been gone long enough that there have been generations of people born since Bill's passed years ago that were never exposed to him, certainly not in a festival. Maybe his music has been kicking around. I think it's just kind of got to the point to where some of the younger players are starting to feel like they've discovered something new. And so it's and then of course you got the old holdovers. One of the things that got to me, and I felt sort of, and on a personal level, there people were starting to come up to me and say, you know, nobody is representing what we like in music, and the players at that point in time were pretty much all middle-aged men that liked Monroe and pretty much nothing else. So they felt like their love and of the material was not being catered to, and it was a very big and powerful point to consider whenever we started talking about doing this camp. It was to catering to people that loved the music and felt like that they were being left out of the bluegrass music scene because, you know, the wave changed and went more contemporary and sort of left the traditional stuff behind, but there were still people that really loved it and wanted to hear it and have a place to enjoy it and explore it.
And I think, Mike, as part of that wave, incredible musicians, part of that wave, incredible musicians, but I think what we're talking about is maybe because they weren't exposed on a regular basis, and like you said, we all just kind of thought Monroe was always going to be around, which is weird, but you just kind of had that feeling. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But great musicians in this newer wave, which is a term we'll use loosely, but they don't have that direct connection like you did of going on stage and you know, everybody coming around and being informally dressed, so they can't get that same feeling. And the feeling, not only the technique, but certainly the feeling and the drive, and I don't mean just by fast, you know what I'm talking about, that feeling that Monroe had when he played.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was representative of the culture that Monroe grew up in, and that culture barely exists anymore.
Right.
There's still some people around, I guess, that are hanging in there, but, I mean, the culture that Bill came from is pretty much been left behind, and you know, so there's not that real specific feel, and the subject matter in the songs and the instrumentals is different. The way people play music is different. I don't think a lot of the people that play really have the stomach for having music shoved right into your face like Bill did. So, I mean, you know, it's not a timid art form.
No. And Heidi, look, you've taken, of course, Mike, I want to get back to you in a minute because Mike's a scholar of not only Monroe, but we've talked about this before, Mike, of different types of playing and different sounds on the mandolin. But Heidi, now look, you've got this lineup coming in 2019 of Mike and David Davis, Richie Brown. There are all different fiddle, banjo, Charlie Cushman, not too bad to remember the Bill Monroe style, flat and Scruggs, and bass. And then you have luthiers, you have guitars, singing. So Heidi, you're taking this concept and And we talked about this a little bit earlier in the week or last week about your teaching methods and your approach to teaching, which go way back beyond Monroe Mandolin Camp. But you're bringing all these forces to bear so that people can not only hear the mandolin sound, of which Mike and all these other people can get that feeling across. You also have all these other performers and artists, and you have a method of teaching to each level, I think, is the best way to start it off.
Right. The whole purpose of this camp, and Mike and I went back and forth on what should we name the camp. Is it the mandolin camp? Is it the music camp? We always envisioned part of our strategy to have all of the instruments represented, because I think that does a complete service to the musician, to the person who's learning. You're a great technician on the mandolin, and you have that rhythm guitar that is rooting you, or the bass that is just solid and gives you a structure from which to work. And so having all the instruments, having luthiers represent the work, explain why certain woods are lean themselves towards instruments better and the acoustics and the sounds. That was always part of our vision and part of our methodology of what we throw through is what is really important to me personally. Every person learns differently. Every person has a different process in which they learn. And one of our approaches is, rather than dictate that you have to learn music orally only, because that's what Bill did, or that's what old-time fiddle music or old-time music did, our approach is to go, look, every individual who comes learns differently. Some are through a tactile with a hands-on, some are more kinesthetic, some are the oral or auditory, others use visual. And as musicians, we often combine those different methodologies in our learning process. So we throw a lot of different ways to learn. You know, one person may learn through reading traditional music or reading tablature. Everybody learns through the practice. It's a very hands-on camp where you learn through the practice of putting your fingers on the fretboard, wherever that may be, and figuring that out. Others may learn through the visual watching of their instructor, or watching during the jams, of watching what other people do. All of these are combined together in what we do and what we throw at the students. And you may have one piece, you may have Rawhide taught six different ways. Some people have notation, some have tablatures, others just listen to what's happening.
Tape recorders.
You know, videoing the instructors while it's going on. And through all of these different ways, they can figure it out for themselves. All musicians, you can have a teacher, but ultimately you have to figure out how, if you have a little pinky finger, how are you going to reach that four-finger chord, or how are you gonna move along on the fretboard? So we have a multi-methodology approach to reach the students, and we're really thrilled to be able to do that.
Mike, let me ask you this. This is a term that Herb Peterson first told me. I'm sure he didn't invent it, but Herb learned banjo. He calls himself a needle lifter. Do you think you got any of those coming to Monroe Mandolin Camp anymore?
Oh, gosh, probably.
You think so? There's enough vinyl? Yeah. What he meant by that is you pick the needle up and you move it back, and you slow it down and you pick the needle. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
You did it.
I was a needle lifter for years.
That's right. I figured you were. That's why. And I love that term, and I'm sure he didn't invent it, but Herb told me that. I thought, that's a perfect description.
I used to know every song on all of the LPs that I had that I had, I think all the LPs that were available at that time. I used to know what all the songs were on either side and whether I had to tune sharp or flat to get with the recording by looking at the color of the spine on the album. So I'd lifted the needle quite a number of times.
Heidi, I wanted to take a minute, Heidi. You've been teaching music, and people are probably more familiar with Mike's background, his history, and his research into music and the skill that he brings to the instrument. But they may not know about Heidi Herzog. I do, but I want you to tell listeners about Heidi Herzog and your music, your teaching, and just all those things.
Well, I think I grew up in the best of many worlds. My mother was a concert pianist in Europe, and so from a very young age, we all started playing the violin at about age two. She brought the classical music element, and she loves ragtime. Go figure. She's British, and if she could be a ragtime pianist, I think she would have done that too. My dad brought us, besides carting four kids around to various instrument lessons every week, my dad also brought us to bluegrass festivals. I think I was about 5 years old when we went to our first bluegrass festival, and I remember in the tent, and we got rained out, and it was exciting. It was someplace in New York. I'm not sure exactly. And I always loved opera. So when I was eight, I was in my first opera, and I combined classical music. We had a string quartet in my family as well as a bluegrass band, and I played mandolin, and I still have the mandolin that my dad got me.
Wow.
And so growing up, I was exposed to a lot of different music, different genres, different people, and touring the world with an orchestra. I started doing that when I was 15, and one day I decided after graduating high school when I was 16, I said, I'm going to be an opera singer. So I decided to go do that and made my debut with LA Opera, a couple decades ago now.
Wow.
And so to me, there are so many similarities between bluegrass and classical music, and there's so many different connections that it's they're not separate. They are separate genres, but there are so many things that you can talk about which would fit either in classical music or bluegrass or jazz or whatever genre that you want. And to me, that's the fascinating part of having this to not play with, but to create whatever we want. And as a music teacher, I'm also a credentialed music teacher, and I've been teaching for probably more years than I would like to admit. There's an excitement that I have in being able to support somebody and saying, okay, well, all right, maybe this way you didn't understand it. Let's try this, or let's try this. Let's try different ways of connecting that dots until there is an understanding, a physicalized understanding within that student's body of what that music is. And so I, to me, it's all fascinating to pull it together.
Let me ask you this. Let's do it this way for a minute. Somebody buys a mandolin or a banjo or a fiddle or a bass or a guitar, and a couple months later they want to come to the Monroe Mandolin Camp. So they're basically kind of a new person at this. What are they going to be exposed to?
First off, they're going to be exposed to an incredible community of people. We have people who are age 6 through 82. We have folks coming from around the world who don't necessarily speak a common language such as English, but there's a commonality within music. Music is a language in and of itself. So if you have two or three chords. You know, there's the standard joke, if you know three chords, you can play 1,000 tunes, right?
Well,
maybe
I've heard that. Oh, I've heard that, and I believe it.
Yeah. So what they will get is there are different levels of learning, and what Bill did with Mike and what Mike has done with other people and other teachers and people at different levels is there's a connection. Whatever level you're at, there'll be someone else who might be slightly better than you that you can soak up and listen to what they're doing and watch what they're doing and experience that for yourself. So if you are a beginner, you'll have a support in any of the jams. You know, what we say is whatever you've learned in one class, take one or two concepts and just try and apply it in a jam. And it's really a community, a supportive community. We have some really incredible instructors that we call kind of our ace in the hole, where we allow them to have some free periods so that if people need a little extra help to understand some concepts or understand how to do movable chords in the same position, so, you know, or two finger chords, that they can have that opportunity to have a little more of a support system working with these instructors or working with other musicians. It's you know, it's like guys in cars. This is an analogy.
Well, Mike,
it's people with instruments who sit down and share with each other, just like you talk about your cars and your engines and all that. It's, and then in women, we have a lot of women involved too. So
yeah, anyway, well, I think this is what happens. I've been to one of these or a couple of these for a while, not in a long while, but it's even. Everything is level. I mean, someone may come in, Mike, and you probably remember what it's like. Well, you do, because you just talked about being on stage with Bill Monroe, but you remember that feeling from this is an unapproachable, or I shouldn't, you know, and so it's an open feeling, I think, from what you're trying to explain. And maybe somebody is intimidated by Mike Compton or Tammy Rogers King or Charlie Cushman or Todd Phillips or Kathy Kallick. Maybe they're, but I would say this to them. It's all becomes a, you're all people interested in music, and you have something to give, and they have something to maybe give back to you or to absorb. I think that's the commonality, and Heidi, maybe that's your term, but it seems to be an even field when these things start.
The level of people that come are to start with are interested in the same type of bluegrass music, so we all know sort of where we're going with it. We have people who have been teaching at the camp every year that are really good at putting people at ease, especially people that have come to the music and the mandolin very recently, and just showing some shortcuts and some ways that they can get involved right away, whether it just be playing simple chords or rhythmic devices, or maybe they're a little bit more advanced in showing them how to use the chords to find melody lines and right hand techniques and all of that kind of stuff. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that help each other outside of class periods, and I haven't seen really anybody that walking around that looks like they're lost. I think we had one year we had a lady that came and was just convinced that she wasn't up to it, and Heidi found somebody for her to talk to that would help her through some basic stuff, and she came back with a smile on her face, and she's been back ever since.
Mike, what is it about bluegrass, and Heidi also on this, what is it about bluegrass that makes it so approachable from the audience? I mean, one thing, you go to a bluegrass concert or festival, a lot of people in the audience will have played or maybe do play an instrument, some very, very well, some just having fun, which is what it's about too. But what is it about bluegrass that lends itself to that, and specifically about something like the Monroe Mandolin Camp that makes it so accessible?
It's the music is about things that happen to everybody. It's common people, common themes, common problems. It's not based around any kind of elite lifestyle. It's things that happen to you. It's things that happen to me. That's what the themes of the music are about. And so it's about all of us. And I think that's what's attractive about it. It's not highfalutin, to use an old word.
Well, that's true. Heidi, you went to a bluegrass festival as a child. You have all these different musical styles to inform you. Do you feel like bluegrass lends itself better to? I don't know if there are opera camps. I mean, can you go to a Beverly Sills opera camp? I know she's not around, but I mean, can you do that?
Yep, you can go to master classes, and there are incredible training programs, and there are summer camps, and you know there are always abilities to be coached. And to me, this is about coaching the person to their personal best at whatever level they're at. And this camp is, in a way, coaching new techniques. To me, it's why this music is accessible is because, for the most part, it's not about the ego. It's not about the individual prowess, so to speak, of the musician, but it is more of a collective experience. It's like an orchestra playing. You have moments of brilliance and individual soloistic areas, and those would be the same thing in a bluegrass concert or a bluegrass jam where each instrument has their little area to shine, but it's still a collective experience. And I think that is what makes bluegrass just as accessible to people, and that's why there's a comfort. And there's a comfort that connects you back through time, that it brings you and connects you to music of the past and music of your grandparents or...
Yeah.
You know, there's cellular memory, I think, that people have of music and the continuity from the past.
Mike, and you mentioned, and Heidi, you probably would recognize this also, the one lady that was terrified, but now she comes back. Do you have repeat offenders, we'll say, that come back to the Monroe Mandolin Camp?
we have an incredible amount of repeat offenders, and We have people who fly over from Australia and New Zealand and Europe every year because they cannot find this music anywhere else but what we're doing. And to me, that is not only do we have repeat offenders, we have a lot of couples starting to come. And couples, the husband or the wife knows how to play and the husband wants to learn, so they're seeing that there's a support system between spouses, and we make it easy that you can take pretty much whatever class you want. You don't have to sit in one track. And so you can explore different instruments if you want. We have word of mouth. We started off with, I think, 4% women in our first year, and our fifth year, which we just finished, we had, I think we had about 39 or 40%, which were women attending, which is huge.
It is.
Me. So.
You know something we've only talked about tangentially, you both mentioned it, people coming from around the world. Now that, you could do days discussing why bluegrass music has this reach around the world to many countries where they don't speak English. I mean, the Japanese interest in bluegrass is mind-boggling, and you'll see a band like perform on stage, and they're nailing these lyrics, and they cannot speak English at all.
Well, I had a Japanese player tell me one time in a jam session that we could not speak formally in our languages, but whenever we played, he understood what I meant. And I think that's breaks down a lot of barriers. If people speak and communicate to each other musically, but not necessarily in their native tongue. There's nothing cooler than that.
Yeah, and everybody seems to enjoy it. You seem to be communicating at a good level.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we're really close to being classified as a hang.
I think what this music also is, and a really important part of music, besides, I mean, I can talk to you about the benefits of singing and our body, but there is such an emotional content to music that you can hear a piece or you can hear a phrase and you can immediately be transported back to a specific emotion or a feeling or where you were or what you were wearing or what happened on that date. And you don't need verbal language to communicate that. It bypasses, and this is another thing that I'm personally interested in, is the plasticity of the brain and where music and speech are processed in our brain, and they're in different sections, and even if you learn them at different ages or different stages in your life, they're stored in different areas. So there's such an emotionality which creates a shared common experience.
Well, listen, I'm so glad, number one, you have the camp. I'm talking to Heidi Herzog and Mike Thompson here about the Monroe Manlon Camp, which this year, September 18th and 22nd, and there's a website, I'm sure if you just plug in, I've done it, Monroe Manlon Camp, you'll find it, but I just think this is a fascinating approach to what I think is overall a fascinating concept of these bluegrass camps, which I've been to a couple, and it takes on a life, and you do. The reason I asked Mike about repeaters is it's kind of a place you come, it becomes like part of your routine, and it becomes a small part of your hometown, as you may travel from Australia or someone else, but you come to this place, and it's like you're back at one of your little homes again. So I'm so glad you guys took the time to chat, and so that people in Unreal Bluegrass can, because I just think it's a fascinating concept, and I think you guys are, and Heidi, we talked a little bit a week or so ago getting ready about your approach to this, which you bring so many teaching and learning methods you've learned and you've taught, and I just think the whole approach is obviously working well because you seem to be expanding all the time.
We are, and it's a tribe. It's a community and a tribe, and I love it. It keeps me up at night. Mike will tell you, thinking about, okay, what else can I do to offer or to improve on the experience or create a different level and a deepening of understanding for people. So to me, it's wonderful, and allows me to have a different creativity in life, and it's a joy, and I call these people friends, and we have a lot of fun with it.
And Heidi, I could see that in your eyes when I saw you several years ago in Raleigh. I knew how excited you were. That was maybe the second year that you were doing this, and I could tell then that what it meant to you. Mike, anything else you want to say? I'm going to let you people go back to your lives here and in this session, but Mike Compton, a lot of people are going to come to see you on mandolin, I think.
Well, I don't think you could necessarily say that what we're doing with the camp is trying to make it into an academic pursuit, not so much as, I think this musical style is still a very valid and powerful way of expressing ideas, and it's not like any other style of bluegrass music. And its intensity, and what we're doing is making an effort to give people the ingredients for those people that are interested in it, give them the ingredients, and showing them how to reproduce the sound and how the instruments work together so that they can reproduce the magic that you and I got to see quite often.
Yeah.
That's not there anymore.
We were spoiled, man. That's all I can tell you.
We were.
Listen, Heidi and Mike, thanks so much for chatting about music, about teaching music, and then tying it back to this Monroe Mandolin Camp, which I just think sounds like a blast. Thanks so much for taking some time.
You're always invited.
All right.
Yep. Thanks so much.
All right. I'll talk to you all later. Bye. I'll see you guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.